With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Blog Talk Radio.
That was a bit of a pause here, ladies. I'm excited. This is Tarie, and I've got two wonderful guests on tonight. The first one is Heidi Hoke, and she is a health practitioner, extraordinary health practitioner in what she does. She started, I think she was her first patient. She healed herself of epilepsy, bipolar, Tourette's, and fibromyalgia, and now her plate is full. And I guess your patient people waiting to see you is full, and so she's an amazing health practitioner, and she helps us all get healthy. I know my own story is she's helped me reduce my insulin, and working with me, and she does it with a natural approach. And I'm so honored to have you on here, Heidi. And now we're going to do I have to call you Dr. Hoke, or can I just still call
you
Heidi?
No, you do not. No, please, Heidi is just great. Heidi works really well for me.
There you go. The only time you tell David, if you get mad at David, your husband, you call me doctor.
I do.
Doctor, tell him, doctor, it's time to take the garbage out. You know, that's what he's got to say to you. How funny is that? Anyway, I'm glad you're here, and I know that Stacy's here with us tonight, and Stacy is an oncology nurse. I think she's been a nurse for 11 years now. Stacy, I think I'm giving the timeline on that correct. I hope I am, but it means that you've talked to a lot of people, a lot of patients and everything. And not only that, Heidi was just telling me before we got started, is that you are bringing a chapter of the Holistic Nurses to Tyler, Texas. I think I said that right. I hope I did. So how cool is that? Yeah. So you do the metaphysical part, and we'll talk about that too, and you do the mainstream part where, you know, you have to take care of the people that are sick and use mainstream medicine or, you know, traditional Western medicine. But you also implement metaphysical, angels, Reiki, and a lot of things. And I think we're going to talk about that tonight because I know that this subject matter, compassion fatigue, is huge on both of your hearts. And so, Heidi, how did you come up with with that? Is it something that you experience, or people in your, you know, people that you know, or how did you come up with it?
Well, honestly, I first began to notice it about a month ago in myself, and it really concerned me, and it was I kind of began to recognizing it as just saying, well, I just need a break. I need a break. So I took a month off. I left the country for 3 weeks, came back, and I was still fatigued. And I thought, this is not about getting away for vacation. This is about something that's going on inside of me. I'm not taking care of myself. And about that time, I had the opportunity to meet Stacy. And we had a wonderful cup of coffee over at Barnes & Noble, and she began to talk about herself and her work. She was actually the one that I first heard the term compassion fatigue. Stacy, would you like to talk a little bit about how you experience it as you had introduced me to it a while ago?
Yes. Well, working in oncology for almost 9 years now, it's one of the fields that, you know, have a high emotional stress kind of on a daily basis. And, you know, basically, it just kind of stresses you, but you don't really realize it at first. And I see nurses falling into this a lot, and it just, you kind of feel an overall feeling of being anxious or irritable, or like you said, just like you just fatigued and need a break. But as I started to treat this within myself about 2 years ago, I started, you know, doing more self-care measures that really aren't practiced or really talked about in the medical field. So I had to kind of go outside of the medical field and to find it. And once I did and started feeling relief, I started to realize that, you know, oh my goodness, we could be showing this to our patients. They're going through an extreme stressful, you know, event. And that's when I started, you know, talking more about it. I'm sorry, does that answer your question?
Yeah, sure. So basically I took this term and I began to do some research on it because it intrigued me, not only for myself because it was something that I could see that I could certainly benefit, but also I was getting clients that were really, they were having to deal with a high stress level, taking care of aging parents, special needs children, husbands and wives that were very, very ill. And I noticed they had some common links, and some of those common links were adrenal exhaustion, thyroid exhaustion. And I'm going to go through some of the symptoms of this. Weariness that goes beyond an appropriate physical fatigue, just constant chronic fatigue, difficulty concentrating, forgetfulness, depression, irritability, bouts of crying or anger or rage, feeling distant from others, going into your own place and just not socializing, sleeping issues, insomnia. They were having headaches, backaches, digestive issues, all of these things. And I begin to notice the commonalities. And in myself, I don't say that I would have gotten very deep into it, but it was just at that very edge where I noticed myself becoming more fatigued than usual, and the rest at night didn't quite do it. And so I thought, you know, I'm emotionally drained. I'm just tired, just emotionally tired. So it really spurred me to do some research. And so I began to learn that this is actually referred to as secondary traumatic stress disorder, which is a form of PTSD. And it's actually treated in a very similar manner. One thing I would say that would be fundamental is oftentimes when we're in this situation, the first thing that begins to be compromised is our diet and our sleep patterns. We don't take time to eat proper meals. We eat on the run. We skip meals. We then we'll have a tendency to go more toward caffeine and sugar, anything to get a boost to get the endorphins going in our brain. And a lot of this is neurological. We get tired, we get fatigued, so we'll go to the first thing that can give us some push, some extra push. And then our adrenal glands begin to get fatigued, and our thyroid begins to get fatigued, and then the physiological effect then goes into the mental effect, and it just keeps snowballing, you know, worse. And then our immune systems begin to go, you know, awry, and we get sick, we get flus, we get colds. And I can see the pattern because I see it happens in my clients, and I just want to let everyone out there know that the biggest point is recognizing it. And once you recognize it, it is so easy to resolve, much easier to resolve than you might think. But it's just the recognition of it and realizing that you cannot care for others until you are mindful of caring for yourself first. And that is so important.
I have a
important.
Question. I get it. So the question I have is, so it's like our statement. It's like when you're in an airplane, you put the oxygen mask on yourself first.
Yes.
Before you put it on your children. Okay. Gotcha.
Yes.
All right. And yes. So I have, there's a gal listening in. I told you guys, she's a friend of mine. She's 26. She went to the hospital, the emergency room, with stroke-like symptoms because she's taking care of her son, who is autistic. When I get, the other day, I have a client who called me, and her friend, just her the father of their children shot himself, and their seven-year-old and eight-year-old. And I spent a great deal of time with that, you know, with that family, talking to them. And at the end of the day, I was like, man, I've spent so much time here. I felt I was in traffic, and I was screaming at traffic. And, you know, so I was like, huh, maybe there's a correlation there. You know what I mean? Because I was overwhelmed, right? So that could be the chronic fatigue, correct? You know what I mean?
Exactly.
You're taking on the energy. Okay.
Exactly.
And then I was looking for, you know, caffeine. I drank an extra cup of coffee because to give me a boost of energy the next day. So you don't have to live like that. But is there like a beginning symptom that starts it, or
I think fatigue. I think fatigue, mental
tired
fatigue. It's a kind of fatigue where rest doesn't help. It's a kind of fatigue where you wake up feeling like you need to go to bed and go back to bed and go back to sleep. You know, it's when your sleep patterns
okay.
just are not to the quality that fully rests your body. And also,
so that's a basic symptom right there?
Oh,
I
think that's the first symptom. I think that's the first
symptom. How about you, Stacey? What do you feel?
Yeah.
Is it okay?
For me,
like,
yeah. Sure. Yeah, for me, I kind of had to think back to when I first really started to feel it, because I've been dealing with it for several years now, but only treating it for the last two. And for me, it was kind of it started on very subtle, like almost sort of a loss of my inspiration.
Yeah.
You know, just kind of a dullness in my life that I couldn't really fill with anything. It was also a feeling that my work was, the amount of energy that I expended into my work was just not for nothing. Like, it was just, everything was, it was too overwhelming, and everything I was doing, the boat was still sinking, you know. So
right.
I was kind of feeling that feeling of not being supported, and then just kind of deciding that it's never going to change. And that's kind of, you know, where a lot of us are stuck, because the healthcare system is just broken, and, you know, we're kind of fighting, and we're not really getting a whole lot of places, and, you know, it's difficult.
Wow.
Stacey, that's actually on, among that feeling that you experience is actually among a kind of a list of causation factors. And if you don't mind, I would like to read over those a little bit. We have, oftentimes it's so very hard to say no. We want to achieve, we want to please, we want to make sure that we're there to do what needs to be done, and it's so hard to say no. I think a lot of us in the health, well, I can say probably 100% of us in the health care industry, healers, compassionate people as we are, we have a very high work ethic, and we often tend to we fill our plates too hot, too full, you know.
Right.
And and that's back to not saying no. You just don't want to say no, and you just give and you give and you give and you give, and you just give more than what you're being replenished, and you just can't do that forever. And as you said, Stacey, a lot of times we feel a lack of respect and support from management, from colleagues, from patients, from clients. We feel sometimes taken for granted, you know. And that's not to say that's truly what's happening. Sometimes it is, but sometimes it's not. Sometimes that's just a feeling that we're having as a result of just feeling fatigued and overspent. sometimes we don't have clear-cut understanding of our responsibilities and authority. Sometimes that's a little bit hazy. Sometimes communication breaks down. Sometimes we're waiting on others to do their job so that we can do ours, and there's, you know, kind of a breakdown in those kind of organizational skills of a team. Some working against deadlines, that's very, very difficult. Not feeling that you have enough time to do your job to the quality that you feel that you would want to do. Dysfunction in networks, sometimes on, you know, on the job or whatever, there'll just be glitches that happen in the organization, and that's so, so very, very hard. And then we come home and we're tired and we just want to have a time to break, and but then that break time goes into our sleep time. So we have to, you know, pick, do I want break time or do I want sleep time? And, you know, I think it's important to realize the difference between relaxation and exhaustion. I had a client that brought that to my attention. You know, she said, I feel exhaustion, but I don't know that I ever feel relaxed. And sometimes we depend on exhaustion as our time to relax. And we don't take the time out throughout the day to relax when we're not exhausted. And we can't fully relax if we're exhausted. Because relaxation is a mindful effort. I mean, that is a mindful activity, I should say. That is something that, that you have to do mindfully. And if you're exhausted, you can't relax mindfully. So, you know, some of those things are, you know, are just you know, considerations. I have a few just pointers before we have to go. I wanted to go through some pointers that may help in being able to handle this in a daily activity. Of course, getting plenty of rest is important. Taking time for light exercise, just even if it's just to get out, breathe deeply, and take a walk down to the corner and back. Something so simple, it might take 2 or 3 minutes, but just to get out of the house, breathe deeply, and just remove yourself from what is really causing so much stress. Varying your work, doing different tasks as you can, doing something, making time for something that is very, very pleasurable to you. And I know that always comes as a last priority. We always put what is pleasurable as a last priority, but that is actually very fundamental to self-care and self-nurturing. Practicing self-centering. When you're on the job, you're under stress, or you're taking care of a situation that is almost about to make you go ballistic, just being able to just stop and just pause to take very deep, slow, healing breaths. Sometimes that can be the difference between managing it and not managing it. Supporting other people and asking for support from other people. Having that interaction and interchange, exchange of support constantly. Saying a little meditative prayer. Praying, meditating, and relaxing and breathing. Breath work is so important. Visualizing, meditation, relaxation. All those things are so important. Keeping a journal, reflective writing, it's important. Asking for help. Being true to yourself with a responsibility of self-care and understanding that is a responsibility that is fundamental to the responsibility of those that you're caring for. Those are just a few. And I wanted to mention.
That last one,
I like
think
this
time. Important.
Go
yeah.
ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say that last one that you mentioned was the most important, I think, about being true to yourself and that it's, you know, it could be considered almost an ethical practice to neglect taking care of yourself
so glad you mentioned that.
Yeah.
Ladies, I have something to say on that note, too, as well. Would you ever go to a hairstylist that didn't have a great haircut or hairdo? Probably not, right?
Right.
So, you know, your health practitioner, you know, your doctor, you know, your nurse practitioner, whatever you go to, that's important that they take care of themselves, you betcha, and nurture their mind, body, and spirit. Good point. So I think that those of us that are listening are going to download it. That is a great point, living in truth. If you're saying to someone else, get rest and relaxation, you better be doing it yourself.
You bet. And that's what came to my mind, and I'm glad that you mentioned that about ethics, because that is truly, it's a fundamental of not only a professional ethic, but a spiritual ethic, that you cannot, knowing that you cannot do your job to the best of your ability for others unless you do that for yourself. And that is a very fundamental part of ethics. And I think that's what probably hit me in the face, because I take such pride in that, you know. Mm-hmm. And that is such an important part in what I do. And I had to do some soul searching and realize that, you know, for everything I told my clients, I had to do that for myself in order to be true to what I did and to be
That's
authentic.
Good. I was...
You know, it's absolutely so, so vital. But I like that, Stacey.
Yeah, I do too, Stacey. Good point. Okay, guys, if you're just tuning in, hold on, let me catch, because people are coming on. If you're just tuning in, Stacey, oncology nurse, and Heidi Hoke, a health practitioner, are talking about compassion fatigue. Heidi just went through a list of, you know, if you're a health practitioner, or even if you're a health practitioner, if you're a healer of some sort, because I just had someone text me, hey, I don't work in the hospital, I don't work as a doctor, but I'm a healer, I do Reiki, and I
you
do... I do psychic readings, and I do coaching, and I'm like, yes, any of those things count.
Absolutely.
Because you know what? I know myself, as I told you, I have learned to put myself at arm's length sometimes, because I know that I'm important taking care of my own health, and sometimes it's just about pausing and relaxation, and you went through a list of things that we can do, that we tell our patients to do, or we tell our clients to do, that before we tell them, look at herself, is this evident in her own life? Good point. And I like that. So let me ask you guys a question, too. And Heidi, what did you get? List those qualities again. What was it? Because she's asking, what did she just say? Can you list them again, what you went through?
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Actually, I didn't go through all of them. There's so many of them, you know. But let me go through some other ones, too. Well, I left off with keeping a journal. And asking for help. Stay connected with the outside world. Oftentimes it is so easy to just pull yourself inward within yourself to be able to have a safe place to go. And while that's a wonderful opportunity in meditation, you don't want to get to a point to where you do not associate with those who can help and support you. And just being able to ask for help and staying connected to the outside world, lifting the phone and calling someone that can bring you laughter, you know, surrounding yourself by happy people who can bring you up rather than, you know, bring you down, you know, choose those people wisely that you associate with, because you don't need negativity at that time in your life. You just do not need it. Realize that you have limited control over the experiences of those that you're caring for. I think it's really important to realize that when you're taking care of one who is ill, realize that their illness is their experience. It is not your experience. Your experience is how you respond. That is your experience. How you respond and how you perceive is your experience. The illness that they are experiencing is not there, is not yours, it's theirs. And I think that is when you can maintain a certain amount of detachment without sacrificing compassion. Do you know?
That's a good point.
You know, it's there's. I read a lot about turning it off and turning it on, and I that kind of a little bit distressed me a little bit because I thought I can't turn off my compassion. I can't turn off feeling personal about what I do, and I take pride in the fact that when I am working with a client, it is something personal. That's the way I choose to practice. But at the same time, understanding that this experience that they're having and their illness is theirs. It is theirs. And I do not own it. I do not own it. My response to them is what I own. And I can still be very compassionate in how I respond to them, but not take on their illness as my own. I think that's a very important part. I think that's what is the differentiation between a caretaker and a caregiver. You know.
You say, okay, so a caregiver is, explain the difference again, a caregiver is one that shows compassion?
I think for me, my understanding would be a caregiver would be one who was able to give to others because they gave to self first.
Okay. May I ask you this question? Hold on one second, okay?
Uh-huh.
So you're saying a caregiver gives to himself or herself first before they give to another. A caretaker would be one that would feel sorry for a person because they're sick, right? And so they're adding to the feeling sorry for that person they'd be feeling.
Yeah.
Feeling sorry for themselves. Good point. That's a great point.
Yeah. I think.
So they're adding to. Hold on a second. I just had an epiphany. They're adding to. They are adding to. They're adding to the caregiver. When they feel sorry for that person who's sick or falling apart, and they want to just make it better for them, and they're making it their own, then they're actually adding to the problem, adding to the energy of feeling sorry because that person is in a not such a good place. But a caregiver is giving compassion without giving the energy of feeling bad for them because of where they're at. Is that correct?
Right. A caretaker would worry. A caregiver would take action to solve the problem.
Gotcha. Okay, that's good.
You know, a caretaker would think they know what's best for them, and a caregiver would just wait and listen and be more in tuned, giving the patient the opportunity to decide what is best for them.
Fair enough.
Caretakers would try to fix problems rather than respectfully wait and allow that person to take. To have input.
I got you.
You know.
Well, I get you. And I know, I'm going to ask Stacey this. Stacey, you're an oncology nurse, and I know that it has been, you have to keep yourself at arm's length because you see people, men, women, and children, that are dying of cancer, right? Or being diagnosed with cancer or going through that tumultuous, it's a challenging time. So how do you deal with that, being compassionate without being a part of it? Especially when you're watching a little, and I guess you've seen children in the hospital with cancer, haven't you?
Well, actually, our clinic doesn't, we don't care for children here, but we have shared patients before with MD Anderson which is very rare. So mainly my patients are adults and the elderly. And it's funny because I can tell you how I used to handle it, and I can tell you how I do now because it's very different. Before, I realized that I wasn't caring for myself. I felt sorry for the patient, you know, and I took a lot of that in, and you know, there was a lot of things that I didn't feel comfortable talking with my patients about, but I felt guilty about that because I could tell that they really needed to talk about some of that stuff, and I didn't feel comfortable, you know, addressing those hard conversations about death and dying and, you know, end of life stuff, because I wasn't comfortable talking with myself about that kind of stuff. So, but once I started, you know, doing self care and working on my own fears. That really changed how I cared for my patients, and I cared for my patients kind of with sharing with them things that had been helpful for me dealing with my stress, you know, and I've been talking more with them about mind-body practices and breathing and doing things that create positive energy and, you know, and it's real. I mean, they love it, you know. It's not things that they're used to hearing, and you know, and that's what it's all about. When you're kind of faced with the end of your life, you know, you can look at it as look how unlucky I am, and look what I've contracted, and I had no control over it, and I have no control over what's going to happen to me from here on out. Or you can say, you know, well, I may not have very many days left, and I want to spend them doing, you know, things that make me and my family happy and create love. And
Stacey, that is an absolute jewel of an example of the difference between a caretaker worrying and a caregiver taking action to solve the problem. You were allowing yourself to be available to empower that patient to be at peace.
Mm-hmm. But I couldn't do it until I started taking care of myself. And, mm-hmm. you know, I got chill bumps when I read that little line in there that it affects how you can care for your patients. And nurses in general are very, you know, they want to know how to take care of the patient, and they'll tell you all day long. But, you know, a lot of us don't take care of ourselves. And so I think that's one reason why this is becoming such an issue.
Guys, I'm going to make sure I really want to clarify something, because, you know, people are like, oh, nurses, I'm not a nurse. But it doesn't matter if you're a parent that is taking care of elderly parents, if you're a parent that is taking care of autistic children, these same principles apply. I have a question. You are a Reiki practitioner, both of you guys are. So you use Reiki on yourself as well as your patients, right? You know, too, as well, or your clients, or your kids, or your family, or your dogs. Or Davis the monkey, right, Heidi?
That's
all good.
Listen, I've got little baby birdies I've been doing Reiki lately. You've been reading my Facebook. I use it on self. I really do. And, of course, Tree, you know that was the first modality that got me out of my most deepest crisis. And I am loyal to that modality, because I know that's one thing, along with breathing, or, you know, that one little quick thing, just to be able to just do the Reiki and just go to those areas of my body that I know just need some energizing, need some strength, you know. And usually it's my head. Usually I have to Reiki my head, because that's my vulnerable place, you know. But, yes, absolutely.
Wow, okay, so that's key right there. And and then another thing, you guys, I just got a question. Somebody says, what meditation, what prayer can I say to help me focus? You know, is there something that you can say to your angels, to God, to Jesus, whoever you believe in, about how to function, how to cope.
Yes,
we'd like to give
Laura
a, say, oh, well, good. Let's hear it, okay, because I'm excited about that.
I have one. This is a beautiful prayer. Today, speak as kindly to yourself as you do to others. Allow someone else to help you in the way that you help others. Give yourself the same permission to make mistakes as you give to others. And do this for yourself today because you deserve it.
Nice.
Here's another one.
That's nice.
Angel of compassion, sometimes my judgment of others is out of alignment with what I truly believe. Thank you for helping me to understand that God's mercy on me is a reflection of my mercy on others.
Wow. Well, well, well. Now, I have you guys, you're just going to love Rose. Rose is, she's an amazing angel coach. She's brand new. But she says there is a website called compassionfatigue.org. That goes
there
in,
are.
And, yeah, so, you know, for all these things that you guys are talking about. Thank you, Rose, for sharing that with us, too, as well.
There's also a website where you can take a self-test. I can give it to you. Actually, we can put it on the Angel Coach's Facebook if you want.
You know what I'd like you to do is I'd like you guys to think about putting a self-test together, okay, where people can come in and interact with you on a webinar. How about that?
That'd be great.
That would be more fun. Yeah.
That'd be great.
Okay, let's do
we
that.
We can do that.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, in that way they get the doctor and the nurse, and you guys can chat with people. So let's plan to do that maybe in August, okay?
That'd be great.
That way you don't have to just, I don't know how you guys are who are listening, but sometimes when I do something, I like interaction, and you know, what I always do is call Heidi, what do I do with this situation? She goes, let me teach the protocol. She'll just write something for me. I was like, wow, and it really works, you guys, amazing. But thank you so very much for that. Heidi, there's a couple other things you wanted to talk about. And then I want to talk about angels and who helps you with compassion and who helps you with all this stuff. So talk to us. Do you have anything else you want to share about this do you, Stacey?
You know what? One thing I did not mention that I think is so important, and it's gotten me through the hardest times, is laughter. I think laughter is something that we don't. I think sometimes it's something that we feel somehow is not quite appropriate when you're dealing with things that are of great importance. And I have experienced that. I have had clients that have told me that when they come in, they may be crying, but an hour later they leave laughing. And I think laughter is probably one of the greatest medicines that we can use, not only for ourselves, but also for others. And I know when I'm working with people, if somehow in the conversation we can include laughter, it sure does help my stress level. It sure does, you know. And I think people appreciate that. And I think that's just a wonderful, wonderful thing to be able to employ or incorporate humor and laughter and lightness of spirit.
Amen to that.
You know, and joy. Laughter is joy. Laughter is joy. And there is joy that can be seen. And joy is such an inspiration to people. People would so much rather be laughing and joyful than not, you know. So that's kind of the way I kind of deal with, that's the way I get my self-nurturing in when I work people, you know, I work with people is I try to incorporate that for myself and I find that other people like it too.
A little bit of laughter is always good, I get to. And by the way, that's what friend and I, we do. We go see a movie on the weekends, and hit or miss, it's a great movie that will make you will laugh your rear off, okay? So it's a funny movie with Sandra Bullock, and I cannot remember the other girl. It is funny, okay? So anyway, you'll laugh a lot. But what do you do, Stacey? Do you know, what do you do? Heidi that uses laughter, what do you do? What do you suggest?
Well, actually, we do use a lot of laughter at work. And that's one thing that we're all, I work with about five other nurses in this one large room, and we're all kind of, we're taking care of our patients, but at the same time, we have this funny banter between each other and our patients, and we're all laughing, and it's a happy place. We have people that are always kind of shocked when they come in. They're so
great.
Stressed out, and then when they leave, they're usually laughing, and, you know, like we have
that's
a joke that it's the last person, the last treatment of the day, or, you know, the last patient out the door, especially if it's a brand new patient, we always tell them that, oh, you're the last one, you're going to have to mop, you know, and we all laugh about it.
I feel you just got out of chemotherapy. You got to mop.
Yeah,
that's good.
Yeah, it's a rule. It's a rule. We don't write them, you know, we just enforce them. And you know, family can't help. It's the patient's problem. So they
That's good.
We also use music. Most of the
good.
Patients that we, most of the patients that we have are elderly. So we're conscious. Not every day. We take a day and we'll do a certain genre every day, but we utilize those genres that were popular when they, you know, were kind of in their prime. I guess, you know, they're prime. They have happy memories in their youth. And one, you know, it's Motown and like folk 70s. That's their favorite. These patients will just sing, and I mean, it's crazy. You just see them come alive, and to me, it's just amazing to see. And so that's another one. But but personally, the thing that puts me most at ease, you know, that I just found for myself is I love the belly dance. You know, and if I do that just once a week, man, it takes care of a whole lot of stress for me. And, you know, that's just one thing that I found that I enjoy to do. So.
Did you say belly dancing?
I do. I love
belly dancing. Yeah, that's what I did. I took that up about less than a year ago. And I tell you, it does wonders for me. It has helped me. So much.
You guys, hold on. Yeah. Let me just tell you something right now. You guys need to start your own show, okay? Health practitioners, a nurse, and a doctor. Take care of the patients and then entertain them after hours, okay? Dinner and belly dancing. That's so cool. Ladies, we got to cut this short now because I've got to make a couple of announcements. You guys have been amazing.
Right.
And thank you so much. And we'll look forward to doing a test and you guys doing the workshop on it. It would be wonderful. And we'll promote that coming up, Heidi.
Okay, we'll do that.
And Heidi and Stacey, love to have you both. I know you guys use Reiki. I also know you use angels. And I'd love to have you back on, Stacey and Heidi, both to hear about the angels. And Heidi gave you guys a prayer tonight that you can listen to the show again that you can use. Great prayer. And I'm going to give you an angel now. Archangel Raphael takes care of healers and travelers. Says that all you have to do is I ask for my support because I support healers. Also, Archangel Haniel helps with healers and giving you grace. Okay, and if you've got grace going on, you know, where you're moving well and you're feeling good, that's a good sign that you're doing it right. And working from passion, always coming from a place of passion, in doing your life's purpose. That's Archangel Michael. So you've got about three of them there that you can choose from. All would help you. Because if you're on autopilot doing your work, that's no fun. And, you know, always good. It's always good to do it on, you know, from joy. Now, we have another show coming up on Sunday. That is our relationship show with Di and I. We've got a new book out. You mean there's a law that says he has to be attracted to me? The book, our book is wonderful. We've got a lot of the other books out there. Our whole website is changing. We're adding more angel coaches. Heidi is an angel coach. She's also some other things here. We're excited about that. Now, I'm going to leave this message. If you guys have any interest in doing spiritual work, then you need to give me a call. Go to my website, angelcoaches.org, and you can email me from there, or go to facebook.com/angelcoaches and send me a message through there. You guys have been wonderful. I am super excited about having you. We've got some new stuff coming up. Stacey, give me a call tomorrow, because if you don't have my number, it's 954-636-9401. Anybody handsome, sexy, good-looking, if you're listening in, that's my number. Call me. Anyway, I love it. I'm hot. Anyway, take care, everybody. Have a great night. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.